This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. Tax Day 2015 wasn't just for filing those last-minute tax returns. That's because the National Labor Relations Board made news this April 15th as its new rules took effect to speed up union elections. And those changes are the focus of this podcast. The rules include a number of new requirements for employers, and they're generating a great deal of discussion in the HR arena. And while it remains to be seen whether the changes will reverse the trend of decreased unionization, what is clear is that employers can't afford to ignore these developments without running afoul of the NLRB. To get to the bottom of all the changes and what they mean for employers, we're joined by Los Angeles employment attorney Mark Theodore of Proskauer Rose. Mark represents management in all aspects of traditional labor law matters, and he has extensive experience practicing before the NLRB. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, Mark, we've mentioned this new rule significantly shortens the existing union election process. Tell us a bit about the new time frame.
Before the rules went into effect, the time frame was an average of about 42 days, so 6 weeks from filing of a petition to an election. And while the new rules don't specifically state a time frame, everybody believes that they will be significantly shorter, like in the two-week range.
And as a practical matter, what do you think shortening the length of time in which a union certification election is held will mean for employers?
Well, it means that there's a much higher probability of a union winning an election. So the previous time frame of 42 days between petition and election resulted in a 62% win rate for unions. That statistic is somewhat misleading because many petitions are withdrawn. However, as that time frame is diminished, the win rate goes up. So statistics compiled by the Labor Relations Institute indicate that elections held 2 weeks from filing result in a 90% win rate for unions. So there's a huge practical difference under the new rules. Less time to hold an election simply means less time for an employer to communicate with its employees about the risks of unionization.
Interesting. Well, with unionization, as we mentioned at the top, on the wane in recent decades, it begs the question, do you think these changes from the NLRB will do anything to reverse that trend?
You know, over the last several years, we've seen a lot of changes that fall into the category of, pro-union or pro-employee that theoretically help organizing. All of the changes to date haven't produced much success for unions and its organizing. These rules, however, are likely to assist a change in the fortunes of organizing because they take away the time needed to properly communicate with employees. Remember, a union could take months or even years to collect the signatures needed to trigger an election, and now more than ever, it controls the timing of events.
Let's talk about communication. Does an employer need to be even more careful in what it communicates to employees in light of these new rules to avoid an unfair labor practice charge?
That's a great question. The rules are still the exact same as always for communicating with employees. The rules that might be considered unlawful before the rule changes went into effect are still unlawful today. Employers, though, may want to think about being much more proactive in communicating now.
Mark, you mentioned being proactive. What do you suggest are some other easy steps an employer may take once it sees the first sign that a union campaign is afoot in its workplace?
It absolutely needs to have a communication plan ready to go. If you had 6 weeks to communicate during an election, you had time to train your supervisors to apprise them of what their role would be. And now that's effectively going to disappear with these new rules. So the employer should be training their supervisors to understand what they can and they can't say, which will, of course, help them avoid any legal problems. But it also, more important, educates the supervisor and the manager on their role in the organization, and that role is to communicate the employer's position about unionization. So employers really need to think about now having a very, very proactive communication plan in place before there's ever a hint of organizing.
You mentioned the importance of training supervisors and managers. In doing that, in light of this shorter time frame, could you give an example or two of things that supervisors should not do or should not say?
Oh, absolutely. As long as I've been practicing, which is about 25 years, the law has been exactly the same, that there are essentially four types of statements that supervisors cannot say that will be considered unfair labor practices. These four categories fall into the acronym TIPS, which stands for threats, interrogation, promises, or surveillance. Threats are what you would expect. Sign a card, or you want to get the union, we're going to fire you, those kinds of things. It can be more implicit kinds of statements like, something will happen if the union gets in, and those are all considered unlawful because they interfere with choice. Interrogation is asking an employee about his or her sympathy for the union, because they have a right to, of course, keep that to themselves. And promise, which is sort of the opposite end of threats, is, I'll give you something to stop unionization. I'll give you a raise, or I'll make you chair of the employee committee or something. And then last but not least is surveillance, which is trying to identify employees' sympathies by, visiting a union meeting or otherwise surveilling them when they have an expectation of privacy.
Again, we're speaking with Los Angeles attorney Mark Theodore of the nationwide law firm of Proskauer Rose. Mark, how would these new rules change the advice that you would give to employers or HR professionals?
The advice would be the exact same as we always would give in these situations, which is, you have to be able to communicate and you have to be ready to communicate. Years ago, there was a bill that was pending before Congress that was entitled the Employee Free Choice Act, which was oddly named, and the reference was EFCA, right, Employee Free Choice Act. That pending legislation would have taken away secret ballot elections, but it wouldn't have changed the communication process. And so we advised then, and we'll advise now, that you just have to be ready, because you have to be ready to have this conversation with your employees, maybe even before there's even a hint of organizing, to help prevent being surprised and prevent that short election time frame.
And it's probably better to have that conversation beforehand, because once the organizing has already begun, I would have to assume that your chances of an unfair labor practice charge greatly increase.
That's absolutely true. And there's a debate in human resources circles about when you should raise the issue of union organizing. Some companies take a very, very proactive approach where during the orientation for new hires, they tell people, hey, we don't have a union. Here's why we don't have a union. Here's why what our position is. Other companies believe that you shouldn't have that conversation unless you absolutely have to, because you might put that idea in employee minds. I will tell you from my professional experience, I've never seen talking about this issue actually spark union organizing. It usually starts for some other reason.
Now, you mentioned your advice would be exactly the same as what you've always given, but is there an employer misconception out there about these NLRB rules that you'd like to take this opportunity to correct?
No, this is one of those that I think every horrible thing that people have imagined is probably going to come to pass, and I wouldn't say that lightly, because I've said, with some of the major decisions that have come out of the NLRB, I personally thought, okay, it's not something that's great for employers, but it's not the sky is falling. In this case, though, they've attacked really the cornerstone of what has been the labor relations process for many decades, which is, the union gets support, it files for a petition, and then there's an exchange of information. And that's being curtailed. And if you take that change with the change that happened a couple years ago in a case called Specialty Healthcare, which basically, it's beyond the scope of our discussion, basically made it so that any unit that is identifiable that the union picks is it. So those two changes, the rules and Specialty Healthcare, pretty much put most, if not all, of the control in the union's hands. And so this one is a very, very serious change, and I don't say that lightly.
Well, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about privacy because that's such a big issue these days. Are there any privacy concerns for employees in light of the shorter election period?
So that's another great question. I think that generally speaking, the type of information the government is going to require employers to turn over once a petition is filed is certainly going to be much more invasive of an employee, the cell phone number, the email address. In the pre-new rules, you just had to turn over the employee's name and his or her physical address, and then that was it. And it gave the union an opportunity. Now, with technology the way it is, and when you turn over that kind of information, you can certainly expect that employees are going to be bothered on a whole new level, perhaps that they didn't expect or want than before.
So with that said, Mark, do you foresee employers perhaps shrinking away from requesting things like cell phone numbers and personal email addresses from their employees?
I think it's going to have some consequences where employers are going to have to think, especially employers who believe there's a higher risk of organizing, that they may not want to have that information so they don't have to turn it over. Of course, I would say that most employers, the vast majority of them, act in what I would say is a rational manner, which is if they need to have a certain piece of information because they either need to contact the employee or what have you, they'll collect it even if they know they might ultimately have to turn it over to the government as part of an election process.
And in closing, because these rules have been receiving so much attention, is there any final takeaway that you'd like to mention for our listeners?
I think it's imperative for employers to plan now for potential organizing under the new rules. Be proactive. Be ready to discuss this issue with employees immediately if need be, or just right off the bat and talk to them. In some cases, the employer may find it advisable to communicate with employees before there is organizing so as to set an appropriate foundation. Finally, and I would say this, and this is again a little bit off topic, but it absolutely factors into this, is that the primary cases that are being prosecuted before the NLRB involve policy violations in the employer's handbook. That in and of itself can have an effect because a policy, even if policy that the employee is not aware of or hasn't read or never contemplated, that is deemed to be unlawful can automatically overturn an election win for an employer. And so now is the time to get all of your policies in order, your communication plan, your position on the union, and get it all set and prepped.
Okay, well, we'll let that be the last word. Mark Theodore practices with Proskauer Rose in Los Angeles, where he represents employers in labor law matters. Mark, thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you for having me, David.
I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Continue checking our website regularly for more programs on hot-button employment topics affecting the world of HR. Recent podcasts include a look at the controversial Indiana RFRA law, plus the Supreme Court healthcare dispute and its high stakes for employers. The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR, our subscription offering, or our new 50-state employee handbook resource, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved.